Again, Constance dropped behind the parapet. She hammered her paws loudly against the stones. Standing up, she watched the terrified chicken hound racing off down the road in a cloud of dust.
Snotty-nosed little upstart.
There was no need for the Father Abbot to concern himself with the underhand dealings of traitor foxes. Constance would be well able to deal with the situation herself. Matthias was famished. He sat down and took his lunch with Mr. and Mrs. Squiddle, the Vole family, Silent Sam, and Basil the Garrulous Hare. The young mouse ate mechanically. He did not really want conversation. This latest discovery of a new and baffling rhyme concerning moonlight, the north, and an unknown threshold nagged at his brain. Methuselah had gone off to seek the solitude of his gatehouse study, where he claimed he could think more clearly. Matthias was not the liveliest of table companions. He smiled and nodded, paying little attention to the chatter of the voles and squirrels. He was not even distracted by Silent Sam, who sat upon his knee stroking his whiskers with a sticky paw. Basil Staghare eyed the food, which Matthias had hardly touched.
"Beg pardon, young mouse, old chap, but if you can't finish that blackberry muffin or that red currant tart..."
Matthias absently pushed his plate across to the hare. Basil needed no second bidding. Abbot Mortimer entered. Seeing the look on Matthias's face, he leaned across and murmured in his ear,
"All work and no play makes Matthias a dull mouse."
"Cheer up, my son."
"What? I mean, sorry, Father Abbot. I didn't mean to be rude. I was trying to solve a problem, you see."
The abbot patted Matthias indulgently.
"I understand, my son. Methuselah has told me of some of the difficulties facing you both. My advice is, don't let it get on top of you. Relax a little. Time provides all the answers. You've done splendidly so far, Matthias. Meanwhile, you must not forget your manners at table with the guests of our abbey."
Matthias snapped out of his reverie. Silent Sam was admiring his sword belt. He laughed.
"Do you like that, Sam? It's the sword belt of a famous warrior."
The little squirrel leaped up on the table. He darted up and down, thrusting out his paw as if he held a sword in it, stabbing away at thin air. He pointed at Matthias. The young mouse gave him a hug.
"No, bless you, Sam. I haven't got a sword of my own yet, but I will have some day."
Silent Sam pointed to himself, cocking his head on one side. Matthias prodded his fat little stomach.
"A sword for you too, Sam? Well, I don't know about that. Your mum and dad might not want you going about armed to the teeth."
Basil Staghare had the answer. He produced a beautifully made knife. It was very small, encased in a cunningly crafted willow bark sheath. The hare beckoned Sam.
"Come here, you dreadful little rogue. I've got the very thing for you. This is a leveret dagger. All young hares carry one. Here, let's try it on you for size, young buccaneer. What, what?"
Basil picked up a worn and discarded sandal. He undid the foot strap. Threading the dagger and sheath along the strap, he fastened it around Sam's waist.
"There, by the left. You look a regular little swashbuckler now."
Bounding up and down with delight, Silent Sam cut a comical figure as he fenced his way along the tabletop, thrusting and parrying at cruets and candlesticks with his new sword and sucking furiously on his free paw. Matthias joined in the laughter as Mr. and Mrs. Squiddle thanked Basil for the generous gift to their tiny offspring. Forgetting his immediate problems, Matthias passed a happy hour in the company of the friendly woodlanders. He enjoyed it even more when Cornflower appeared. She shared Matthias's seat, glad to be off her feet for a while. Basil nudged Matthias.
"Excellent little filly, that girl. Do you know she can produce more tuck in the twinkling of an eye than you could shake a stick at? You'll mark my words, young fellow, my mouse. A body would be lucky to settle down with her. I say, have you noticed the way she looks at you? Hinds look at stags like that. Noble creatures, stags. It strikes me that you could be just the stag for her. Why, I remember when I was only a young lance-jack."
Cornflower was making such faces that Matthias was about to silence Basil when Methuselah popped in at the door. He beckoned urgently to Matthias. Hastily, the young mouse excused himself and left. Basil leaned closer to Cornflower. He smiled roguishly.
"You didn't know I was a lance-jack, did you, my dear? Ah, those were the days of the old 47th Hare Border Rangers. That was the first time I ever clapped eyes on a stag. I say, I'm not boring you, am I? Nod's as good as a wink to old bachelor Basil, you know.
Methuselah was in a ferment of eagerness as he led his young friend over to the gatehouse.
Matthias, I found out where the threshold is.
The ancient mouse refused to say more until they were safely inside his gatehouse study with the door firmly shut. Even then he said nothing that made any real sense, shoving Matthias to one side as he delved through old parchments and manuscripts, scattering books left and right.
Where is it? I had it not 5 minutes ago. Hello? What's this? Oh, the treatise on Bee Folk of Redwall.
Methuselah hurled the dusty volume to one side, narrowly missing his companion.
Wait a tick. I think I may have put it down over there.
Matthias gazed in bewilderment at the overcluttered study. Books, scrolls and manuscripts littered the small room. In his excitement, Methuselah opened a desk and practically disappeared under an avalanche of paperwork.
Hey, steady on, old mouse. What are you up to?
Methuselah emerged jubilant, clutching a yellowed book.
Eureka! This is it! Sister Germaine's literal translation of Martin the Warrior's Abbey Blueprints.
He flicked swiftly through the dusty pages of the aged volume.
Let's see. Gardens, cloisters, bell tower. Here it is. The Great Wall and its gates.
The old mouse winked at Matthias gleefully as he adjusted his glasses.
Listen to this. On the west wall will be situated a main gate so that creatures may come and go, obtaining entrance to or exit from the Abbey of Redwall. This entrance will be guarded both night and day, for it is the main gatehouse, and as such is the very threshold of our abbey.
The two mice hugged each other. They danced around amid the chaos of paper, chanting with joy.
The gatehouse is the threshold! The gatehouse is the threshold!
The abbot who was passing by heard the noise. He shook his head at Ambrose Spike, who was coming from the opposite direction.
Mayhaps they've been at the October Ale a little too much, Father Abbot,
said the hedgehog. The abbot chuckled at the idea.
Well, if it helps them on their mission of discovery, Ambrose, perhaps they ought to drink some more, eh?
Aye, 'tis enough to inspire any creature good October Ale. Perhaps it might inspire you one day to make me keeper of the cellar keys, Father.
Inside the gatehouse study, the two companions were once more at work, trying to break the code of the Great Hall rhyme.
Well, that's another piece of the puzzle in place. But we've jumped ahead of ourselves a bit. There are four lines before that to crack yet. Look for the sword in moonlight streaming forth at night, when day's first hour reflects the north.
Matthias interrupted.
Those first two lines sound as if they could only be solved in the darkness. Look for the sword in moonlight streaming forth.
I agree, but the next line is of vital importance. It tells exactly when to look. At night, when day's first hour.
Let's look at this logically. Go through it word by word.
Slowly, they repeated the line together.
At night, when day's first hour.
Methuselah slumped in his armchair.
I'm afraid it doesn't mean anything to me.
Wait! Midnight is the last hour of the old day. So by the same token, 1 o'clock in the morning is the first hour of the new day. But we still tend to class it as night time. It is, as the rhyme says, at night when day's first hour.
I believe you're right. Day's first hour is not when it becomes light. It's 1 in the morning, still dark.
Matthias leaned wearily against a stack of books.
But if the gatehouse is the threshold, Where are we supposed to stand to see anything an hour after midnight?
That's easy. The rhyme says, from o'er the threshold seek and you will see. It's simple. What is above our heads right now?
Matthias shrugged.
The wall, I suppose.
Methuselah banged his paw down on the arm of the chair.
Exactly. And where is the only place you can stand on a wall but on top of it?
Suddenly it became clear to Matthias.
Oh, I see. From o'er the threshold means that we must stand on the wall directly above the gatehouse.
As fast as they could run, both mice hurried up the steps to the top of the wall. With Matthias in the lead, they pounded along the ramparts. Matthias stopped above the gatehouse and stamped his foot upon the stones.
I'd say about here. Would you agree?
Methuselah looked a trifle doubtful.
It looks to be a very rough approximation.
Matthias had to concede. He looked sheepishly about. The stones where they stood were no different from any other part of the wall. The trail seemed to have gone cold again. Dejectedly, Matthias sat down on a heap of rock and rubble that had been there since the invasion.
What are we supposed to do now? Hang about up here until after midnight and wait for a miracle?
The old gatekeeper raised an admonitory paw.
Patience, young one, patience. Let us take stock and review the facts. Lend me a knife for a moment.
Matthias drew Shadow's dagger from his belt and gave it to his friend. He sat watching as the old mouse began writing in the dust from the rubble. Item 1. Martin is Matthias. Item 2. We have found Martin's tomb. Item 3. We have also found his shield and sword belt. Item 4. Our task is to find Martin's sword. Item 5. Where? From here, the top of the gatehouse wall. Item 6. When? At 1 in the morning, when moonlight streams forth. Item 7. In which direction? To the north. They sat in silence, digesting the facts on the list. Then Matthias spoke.
Suppose we look to the north.
Both mice turned their heads northwards.
Well, what do you see, young one?
Matthias's voice was tinged with disappointment.
Only the abbey. Part of the beehives. The north side of this wall. And the treetops beyond. What do your eyes see, old one?
Exactly the same as yours do, though perhaps a bit dimmer. Don't give up hope, though. Let us keep looking. Maybe we'll see something.
The surveillance continued. Apart from retrieving his dagger, Matthias sat very still, peering northwards. Eventually, he had to give up, as his eyes were beginning to water and he was getting a crick in his neck. Methuselah had fallen asleep in the afternoon sun. Angrily, Matthias slammed his dagger point deep into the edge of the rubble heap.
I told you it was a waste of time. Can't you stay awake for 5 minutes? Must you go to sleep on me?
The old mouse awoke with a start.
Hey, what's that? Oh, Matthias, there you are. Oh, dear me, I must have dropped off for a moment. Sorry, it won't happen again.
Matthias was not listening. He was digging in the rubble with his dagger. Methuselah watched him curiously.
What in the name of goodness are you up to now?
The rubble scattered as Matthias dug away madly.
I think I've found what we're after. There's some sort of shape in the stone down here. Trouble is, there's too much rubbish on top of it. I think we need Formol's help again.
Formol and his team arrived panting, with Matthias running ahead. The moles collapsed on the rubble, breathing hard.
Yeah, only gotten bitty short legs as moles do. I takes it you and General Mice needin' our help again.
This time Matthias understood.
Yes, please, Mr. Formol. Do you think that you and your team could possibly move this pile of rock and rubble? There's something we need to get at underneath it all.
Formol spread his stubby paws wide. He smiled winningly.
Yeah, no sooner said than done, young un. Where a doom like a shiftin' to?
Matthias shrugged.
Oh, anywhere, I suppose, as long as it's not in our way.
Formol spat on his paws and rubbed them together.
Right, mateys. Best dumping this lot where it come from.
The two mice had to jump aside smartly as the mole team took over. With much hurring and ahhing, they waded busily in, bulldozing the enormous heap of rock and rubble off the top of the ramparts. It tipped downwards in earthy showers back into the trench in the abbey grounds, whence it had first come. Matthias watched admiringly.
What splendid workers these moles are, Methuselah.
As the hill dwindled, his friend heartily agreed.
Indeed they are. Their skills and knowledge are passed on through families, you know. Earth, rock, shale or root, they can handle it all. Do you know it was the moles that dug the foundations for this very abbey? Four mole can claim direct descent from the mole who was in charge of the operation. In fact, it was Martin who bestowed the title Four Mole upon his ancestor.
As the mice conversed, the moles hailed the last of the rubble from the ramparts, then set about brushing the stones clean. Four Mole tugged his nose in salute.
We'm done now, sirs. I'll bid ye good day.
10 seconds later, they were all gone.
Moles aren't too fond of heights,
observed Methuselah.
Right, let's see what they've uncovered.
It was a circle cut into the stone. On one side it was cut shallow, while at the opposite side it was carved deeply. The centre was domed with two slots graven into either slope. At the apex of the dome was the letter M. Beneath it were carved 13 small circles, each with a smiling face upon it. Constance came rambling along the wall, checking on the road beneath.
Hello there, you two. Are you staying up here all day? You'll miss afternoon tea if you don't hurry. There'll be precious little left with 3 squirrels, 3 voles, and Basil Staghare as guests.
Studying the carvings, Matthias waved absently at the badger.
You carry on, Constance. We'll be down shortly.
The badger's natural curiosity was aroused. She came over and stood between the two mice. After a cursory glance, she threw up her paws in mock despair.
Oh, no, not more puzzles and riddles.
Methuselah gave her a severe stare over the top of his glasses.
My dear Constance, kindly do not pour scorn on things you know nothing of. Leave it to those with specialized knowledge.
Turning to Matthias, the old mouse continued.
Yes, most interesting. These 13 small circles with smiling faces. What do you make of them?
Matthias could only shake his head. He could not think what the circles might mean. Constance interrupted.
What do you mean those things? They're obviously the 13 full moons of the year.
Methuselah was distinctly piqued.
How do you know that? Explain yourself.
Constance scoffed.
Any badger worth its salt knows all about the moon. Do you want me to recite all its phases? I can, you know.
Matthias was suddenly back on the track again. He counted along the moons, stopping at the 6th one.
That one will be this month, June. When is the full moon due in June, Constance?
It's tomorrow night. Why, is something supposed to happen then? Some magic or a miracle?
Methuselah ignored the badger's attempt at levity.
If we stand up here at 1 o'clock in the morning, on the night of the full moon, we may be able to find the sword of Martin the Warrior.
Constance scratched her muzzle.
How are you going to manage that?
Matthias ran his foot around the edge of the circle.
We're not quite sure yet, but we're trying to figure it out. You see, it's all linked closely with the rhyme from the wall of Great Hall, Martin's tomb, and the stuff we found in it, the sword belt, a shield, another rhyme on the back of a...
Constance interrupted.
What type of shield?
Oh, pretty much the standard kind used by warriors. A round steel affair with hand and arm holds.
The badger nodded knowingly and continued where Matthias had left off.
Yes, I've seen that sort of thing before. Not much to look at. In fact, just the type of shield that would fit precisely into this circle. Can't you see the slots for the armholes? But then again, if you look at that carved circle, you'll notice that it's cut so that the shield would tilt, probably to reflect the moonlight.
Both mice stared at the badger. There was awe and respect written upon their faces. Matthias shook her paw with great ceremony.
Constance! Wonderful badger! Old friend! Don't worry about afternoon tea. You just sit yourself down right there, because I personally am going to bring you the largest, most delicious tea that has ever been served within the walls of this abbey.
The warm red stone ramparts rang to the echo of the three friends' delighted laughter. Chapter 8. Clooney lay with his one good eye half open. From beneath its slitted lid he watched Seela the vixen. The sly old devil was definitely up to something, he was certain of it. Clooney had secretly questioned Fangburn about the conversation that had gone on between Seela and her son. There was no doubt about it. The foxes were trying to dupe the warlord. Clooney had cursed Fangburn for 20 different kinds of an idiot. Fancy not being able to read and allowing Seela to write out a message. Imagine letting Chickenhound go free without first getting the scroll read. If he had been a little fitter, he would have personally slain his oafish captain. But as it was, Clooney kept silent about it all. Even if Seela was playing a double game, he needed the fox's healing powers to regain his health and strength. Meanwhile, Clooney the Scourge made his own counter-espionage moves. He allowed Seela to minister to his wounds, but he secretly stopped taking the herbs and potions to help him sleep. Early next morning, Chickenhound returned. He carried a bag laden with medicinal ingredients. Clooney feigned sleep, but secretly he observed the foxes closely. They nodded and winked at each other quite a bit. When they were reasonably sure he was asleep, the two held a hurried whispered conversation, and though, unfortunately, he could not hear what they said, their behaviour was secretive enough to make Clooney sure he was right. They were planning a double cross. Clooney did not tell any of his officers of his suspicions. He kept everything to himself. This way, there could be no possible leak of secrets. Clooney was content to watch and wait, getting a little stronger each day. Then after a while, he came up with a fiendishly simple idea. He ordered that the room be cleared. He wished to be alone so that he could rest. When he was quite sure that he would not be disturbed, Clooney took a quill and parchment from the bedside table. He drew a diagram, complete with pointing arrows, horde positions, lines of attack and defence, together with written instructions. It was a plan for the second full-scale invasion of Redwall Abbey. Clooney made it clear that the success of the attack depended solely on the battering ram breaking through the main gate. When he had finished writing, Clooney pushed the parchment under his pillow, taking care to leave just a small corner of it jutting out. His officers would be too slow and dull to notice it, a tiny scrap of parchment showing from beneath the pillow. Even if they should, they would attach no importance to it. But Seela the Fox would. Clooney settled down to wait. Redtooth and Fangburn returned with their captive guest an hour later. Clooney stretched himself luxuriously and yawned aloud.
Ah, I had a nice peaceful nap without you three clattering about the room and creating a noise. How's that tree felling coming along?
Redtooth leaned upon his spear.
Shouldn't take much longer now, Chief. I've ordered some of them to get a good blaze going so that the trunk can be fired and hardened.
Clooney flexed his injured tail slowly.
Good. Make sure that all the large branches are cut off close to the trunk. It'll make it easier to carry. Now, Fox, how about changing these bandages and giving me something to make me sleep tonight? That stuff you gave me yesterday wasn't much use. I was tossing and turning for hours before I got any rest.
Seela made a sweeping servile curtsy.
Now that my son has brought my new ingredients, I can certainly give you medicine to make you sleep. Sir, I guarantee you'll go off like a bug in a blanket, if you'll pardon the expression, sir.
Just as long as it gets me to sleep,
said Clooney, smiling inwardly. That night, Clooney allowed Redtooth and Fangburn to guzzle their fill from a cask of barley wine that had been found in the church cellars. He gave Seela permission to drink also. Clooney watched as the fox pretended to drink as much of the barley wine as the rat captains. While she was doing this, Clooney also pretended to take his sleeping medicine. Clooney and Seela continued with their pantomime, neither letting a drop pass their lips. It was late night. Clooney joined in the snores of his drunken officers. The room was comfortably warm. A lone candle flickered in its socket. Clooney felt the pillow move slightly. Sela was taking the bait. Clooney gave a big imitation snore and smacked his lips contentedly. Some day he must learn to play chess. He bet himself that he would be unbeatable. Clooney also made a wager with himself that the plans would be back, safely tucked under the pillow by morning, and that Sela would have an accurate copy of them hidden away somewhere. Now he could catch a few hours' sleep. No doubt the mice would be interested to learn of his scheme to attack the main gate with a battering ram. They would strengthen the gatehouse and deploy the main body of defenders in the immediate area. Clooney could have laughed out loud. While they were defending the gate, he would be tunnelling under the southwestern corner of the Abbey wall. Chapter 9. The deep, warm, brazen voice of the Joseph Bell tolled across the tranquil meadows, its echoes fading in the leafy depths of Mossflower Wood. It was 11 o'clock on the night of the full moon. Inside Cavern Hall, the candles burned bright. Most of the woodland defenders and redball mice had retired to their beds. Those who preferred to stay awake were gathered by invitation of Matthias and Methuselah to a party supper. All who attended wished them well on their quest. Abbot Mortimer took the floor.
My friends, redball mice and honoured guests, we are gathered here tonight not only to pay tribute, but to add our heartfelt good wishes to Matthias and Brother Methuselah. May they have success and fortune in their venture this night, and may our abbey soon be enhanced by the restoration of the sword that belonged to Martin the Warrior.
The abbot took his seat among cries of hear, hear. There was much paw-shaking and fair-patting. Matthias felt deeply honoured, but very impatient. The hourglass had to empty twice more before the crucial time he awaited. He stole a sideways glance at his companion. Methuselah could hardly stop his eyelids from dropping. The hard work they had done, combined with the nervous tension, were beginning to tell upon the old gatehouse keeper. Matthias nudged him gently.
Wake up, old one. If you're tired, I'll help you to your room. Constance and I can take the shield up to the threshold. You get a good night's sleep. We'll tell you all about it in the morning.
Methuselah came wide awake with indignation.
You'll do nothing of the sort, you young scallywag. I could give you a 10-second start and still beat you to the top of the wall. Do you want to try me?
Constance coughed and spluttered upon a candied chestnut. She roared with laughter.
I wouldn't attempt it if I were you, Matthias. He's liable to beat you hollow in his present mood.
The old mouse, seeing the humour of the situation, began to chuckle.
And don't think I couldn't, you great stripy lump. Here. What do you say we put this young mouse up in the dormitory? It's way past his bedtime. You and I could go to the threshold together.
Constance and Methuselah collapsed against each other, laughing helplessly. It was all Matthias could do to keep a straight face. He pretended to take offence at Methuselah's statements.
Why, you old pair of relics! It wouldn't take me 2 ticks to bring you some warm milk and tuck you in your own beds. Then I'd be free to get on with the job myself.
The three friends laughed until tears streamed down their cheeks. Methuselah held his side as he spoke between gusts of merriment.
I say, Constance, you old fogey, you'd better come along with us. Matthias is a bit old for this sort of thing.
Matthias had fallen off his chair, pleading for the joking to stop as he rolled about on the floor, exploding from bouts of giggling to fits of laughter. Basil Staghare tut-tutted severely as he remarked to Ambrose Spike.
Dreadful table manners. Just look at those three kicking up a hullabaloo like that. Eating's a serious business. They haven't touched a bite of supper, you know.
Aye, so I see,
grunted the hedgehog.
Yeah, you don't suppose they'd mind, do you?
Not at all, not at all, dear fellow,
said Basil regally, as he shared the contents of the three plates between himself and Ambrose.
Saves it all going to waste, what?
It was 15 minutes before 1 o'clock in the morning. Three figures crossed the abbey gardens as the moon broke from behind a drifting cloud bank. The nearby pond was bathed in silver sheen, parts of the sandstone wall reflecting back a wavery bluish light. Constance and Methuselah carried lanterns. Matthias bore the warrior's shield upon his arm. They ascended the wall steps in single file, acknowledging the murmured good wishes of those on sentry duty. Matthias had decided against trying the shield in his niche before the appointed hour. He felt somehow that they must abide by the rules of the verse, waiting until day's first hour on the night of the full moon. It just had to be so. No use tempting fickle Dame Fortune. Solemnly, the three friends gathered around the carving upon the ramparts. Matthias clutched the shield tightly, waiting for the stroke of one. High above the small world of Redwall, the moon also waited, suspended in velvety space like a pale gold coin. It seemed that the minutes stretched into an eternity, in which silence reigned over all. The great Joseph Bell boomed out once. It was 1 o'clock, day's first hour. Slowly, reverently, Matthias lowered the shield of Martin down onto the stone circle that had been carved many long years before to receive it. The shield made a mild clanking sound as it was laid to rest in its niche. It fitted perfectly into the stone receptacle. All three creatures stood back a pace to see what might happen. Matthias was first to cry out,
"Look! The shield is reflecting the moonlight back into the sky!"
Moonlight seemed to concentrate upon the highly polished steel dome in its designated position, sending an intense beam of white light back off into the night sky. Methuselah blinked. Holding his paw across his eyebrows, he stared into space, trying to follow the path of the reflected moonlight.
"Truly, it is a most beautiful, wondrous sight. Alas, my old eyes are not what they were. All I see is a light shooting off into infinity."
"Wait! Look at the abbey roof! The beam cuts right across the top gable. I can see the weather vane as clearly as if it were day."
"Good heavens, you're right! The abbey weather vane! It's the one thing that's caught in the path of the light!"
"North! Thing north! It's the weather vane arm that points north! That's where the sword must be!"
Solemnly, the three friends placed their paws one on top of the other. At long last the mystery was solved. They knew now where the sword of Martin the Warrior had been for countless years, on the arm of a weather vane, pointing north. However, it was three rather disconsolate creatures that sat down to early breakfast after a few hours' fitful sleep. They had encountered a major problem: how to get the sword down.
What a pity we haven't got about 30 or 40 extra long ladders that we could tie together to reach the roof."
"Oh, do be quiet, Constance. That must be the 10th time you've said that in the last hour."
"Sorry, only trying to help."
Methuselah pushed his porridge aside.
"There are only two ways that you could help, my friend. One, by keeping silent. Two, by turning yourself into some creature that could climb all the way up to that roof. A bird or a squirrel or something."
They sat and stared at Methuselah in amazement. A solution of stunning simplicity had been found.
"I do hope that Mrs. Squirrel hasn't decided to sleep in. She'll need an early start if she's going to make it back by lunchtime."
Mrs. Squiddle, or Jess as she liked to be called, was only too pleased to oblige her friends from Redwall. Having been given full instructions by Matthias, Jess stood at the base of the immense abbey building. The Squiddle performed what looked like an intricate acrobatic dance, followed by several cartwheels at lightning speed.
"She's just limbering up,"
Mr. Squiddle explained to Matthias. A large crowd of mice and woodlanders had gathered to witness the epic ascent. Not even in the oldest recorded writings was there any mention of a creature venturing to climb as high as the abbey roof. It was a most formidable task, for the roof soared to nearly twice the height of the bell tower. Jess elbowed her way through the throng. She kissed Mr. Squiddle, patted her son Silent Sam upon the head, then shook paws with Constance, Matthias and Methuselah. With a brisk, cheery manner, she scooped up a handful of soil, rubbing it into her paws to give some extra gripping power.
"A lovely day for a climb."
Then away she went, paw over paw up the massive abbey face. The lower wall with its arched sandstone window frames held no difficulties for the tough Squiddle. She climbed with speed and alacrity, lifting herself over the gutter with a neat flick of her bushy tail. Jess clattered across to a small slate side roof. She was temporarily lost to view at the start of the second stage. As she came into sight again, the watchers below could not help but notice that the climb was more difficult. Progress was slower. Mr. Squirrel cupped his paws and called up,
"Are you all right there, Jess?"
Latching her tail around a projecting gargoyle, Jess shouted back,
"Well, I'm making headway, my dear. This stone, though, it's a bit rough on the old paws and claws. It's not my good old wood or tree bark."
Chins went up, heads tilted back. The crowd below followed the ascent of the plucky Jess Squirrel. By this time, she seemed to the watchers to be rapidly diminishing in size as she forged upwards. Formole, who was never too keen on heights, covered his eyes with a paw.
"My dear, dear me, seem like an owly bird always up there. Nay, I'm afeard to look."